Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm looking forward to our third session here. And I want to start out by explaining something. I'm learning something about myself all the time. I was really uncomfortable yesterday afternoon, and I couldn't figure out why. It's not like me. And now I know why. I did a series of step talks recently in Tampa, and I decided to incorporate in them history 1 week, the 40s, then the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And there's so many obscure events that happened then that I couldn't remember them. So I started making notes. And then I would look at the notes in order to get all the stuff. And I somehow told myself that my memory was shot and that from now on you better give talks with with notes, which Jack noticed. He said, "How long have you been using notes?" And, of course, I'm talking and I'm going, I wonder if I'm following the notes right. And it was driving me crazy. And so at 3 this morning, this is more typical because this is going to be fun. I came up with the lecture for now. And so there won't be a chicken and egg lecture. We're going to have an entirely different one. And that's why I'm so excited. Just for the CD purposes, the chicken and the egg was sort of a way of, like the holograms, of coming up with a different way of looking at things. And it started with, you know what a chicken is? A chicken is nothing more than an egg's way of reproducing itself. And you go, well, God damn, I never would have looked at it that way. And very interesting, but hardly the basis for a lecture. What came to mind in very strong clarity was some lines out of the 12 and 12, step 11. And I think if I took a show of hands in here as to what is the step that is used the least in AA, we would all raise our hands to step 11. Compared to the 12-step work that we do, and we're working new guys through the steps, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. And step 11, and Bill writes about that, that it has a hard time making itself part of our everyday life. So there were some sentences just to set the stage. And the first sentence I'm reading, read this sentence or think about this sentence in terms of your own ego, as we've been talking about the ego as blocking us. And the sentence read, we well remember how something deep inside us kept rebelling against the idea of bowing before any god. Well, I wonder what part of that was, of us that was. Don't you be bowing down. Don't you be bowing down. And it was the part in me that doesn't want something to take its place. I want to bow down to my own ego. And now we have everything in proper perspective. So when I arrive in this program and they go, well, there's this wonderful God, you just go turn everything over to him. There's part of us that are going, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to be a plan that we're going to follow. Then on the next page is where he said, now and then we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. And I think we talked about that yesterday. Somewhere along the way, it's like you just get the shade to open about that far, and you just go, yow. Well, back to the real world. You know what I mean? Well, that's cool. But life is waiting. Life is waiting. I think there was a line in the chicken and egg lecture of a little one-line poem called The Dumb, Stupid World. And this is the dumb, stupid world poem or line. A man sat in his backyard for several days, having a most intimate and wonderful conversation with his own God while the world passed him by. Dumb, stupid world. And it's just a way of, yeah, that's interesting, but there's stuff that has to be done here. And we would look at that and go, now, what a waste of time that is when there's money to be made. So the glimpse. Then the world's libraries and places of worship are treasure trove for all seekers. So now you see where the idea that seeking as an individual springboards out of our own literature. We get to this point, now it's up to you, not your sponsor, you. He can't pick a book out and read it and connect and see where it takes you. He helped you get there, and now you're. And I think the reason you're here is something inside of you said, I wonder if I can go further than I am right now. And the answer is yes. It's, I don't know, who knows how far. So let's look at the next and last page that I want to. After all, no man, Bill's talking about using our imagination and how we used to fantasize about stuff and then so we criticize it, but he's talking about imagination. There's nothing wrong with constructive imagination. All sound achievement rests upon it. After all, no man can build a house until he first envisions a plan for it. Well, meditation is like that too. It helps to envision our spiritual objective before we try to move towards it. I can't tell you how many years my spiritual objective was just keep going to meetings, pray, help other people, do some service work, really try to be a good AA. Now, that's a very noble spiritual objective. And many of us have settled into that with a degree of excitement and comfort that has kept us going for a long time. But from time to time, I don't know about you, but I would look at someone like the Dalai Lama and I would go, what is that? And then, with the audacity, I would say, I wonder if I could do that. And then came the backlash. You wouldn't believe it. Are you kidding? You're just a little puke. Don't you even think about that. Don't you get that off your radar. I bet you would have the same reaction if you took that inside and said, you know, I might try to be like these spiritual writers. Be like Stephen Levine. Be like Adyashante. Be like Joel Goldsmith. Be like the people we have that have written those books who are talking about a view of life that is so exciting. It's like reading science fiction. They are in, oh, is that, what a place that is. Well, that's fun to read about it. What about going there? How could you go there until you made that your spiritual goal, your spiritual objective? And so about 4 or 5 years ago, I just said to myself, I'm going to fully awaken. I don't know if I am, but that's opened up. I can't tell you what happened after that. It's just like, wow. And things just keep coming in that are really exciting. So what I'm suggesting is watch your own reaction as you take it in. You know something? I think I'm going to fully awaken. and watch out for the beating you're about to take. from yourself as that idea comes in to the kingdom that is currently in place. Because that would be an overthrow, a complete overthrow of the monarchy that has been existing inside of you for all your life. So we clearly don't want to get rid of all our old ideas. We don't want to. And then we wonder, and sometimes I think about remove all the character defects that stand in the way of my usefulness. The reason I still have them is God has determined that they're not blocking my usefulness. So the reason I'm still kind of an ass, God wants me to stay an ass, which is a complete mistranslation of that whole thing. In other words, as preposterous as it may sound, the reason we're not fully awakened, just like these people that we see, just like St. Francis, is that we don't want to be. We've told ourselves, no, you can't have that. You don't deserve that. Don't put that on your agenda. Get a little better than I am. That would be good for you. That's about all you deserve, a little better than you are. We'll give you that much more territory out of the kingdom. Because we already gave up the whole drinking area over on the East Coast. But the rest of it has to stay under our control in here. Okay, so when you think about awakening, that's our whole program. We talked about that. The purpose of the 12 steps is to have a spiritual awakening. So awakening is the solution to the problem that human beings have. If that's the solution, then what's the problem? Now here it gets a little tricky. What is the problem if the answer to the problem is having an awakening? The problem is not knowing that we're not awake. You understand? So to the person, there is no problem. He can't possibly sit there going, gee, I'm not awake. We think we're awake. That's why it's so difficult. So to get the point home, if we use awaking, what do we wake from in real life every day? Sleep. We go to sleep and then we wake up. And then sometimes when we sleep, we have a dream. Boy, the dream was real. That dream was, I couldn't believe it. They were chasing me, and then I woke up. So when you woke up, then you're no longer being chased by a gorilla. But while you're being chased by a gorilla, you don't say to yourself, I'm just dreaming. You're running like hell because it's real. And it's real because I'm thinking it. That's how everything gets real, is I think it. So here's the scenario to make the point of how difficult this is. We'll make a movie out of it. Guy falls asleep and he goes into a dream and he can't get out of it. And he's been dreaming now for, you know, like 5 years, and all his friends, come on, wake up, and whatever they do, he's just there. And then you can see him, you know, he's obviously having reactions to this, so we got to rescue him. And you're his closest friend. And the scientists have figured out a way to reduce you down to a drop so they can inject you inside of his brain. This is a good science fiction movie. We could get this into Hollywood. So getting aside the difficulties of getting there, you're there. And your friend says, Ralph, what are you doing here? Oh, I just came to talk. I want to talk to you. Oh, good, man. I'm glad you're here. Oh, yeah. Now, your job is to to convince him that he's dreaming, that everything that's happening is a dream. What are you going to tell him? Hey, you're not awake. Yes, I am. I'm right here talking to you. What do you mean I'm not awake? No, you're in a dream. You're dreaming. Come on, listen to me. I'm going to explain. I think we would fail. That's what I think. I think it would be extremely difficult to have him say, oh, I see. You're right. I am dreaming. None of this is real. So now we're here, and we're trying to do that to ourselves. I see. None of this is real. What's real is that glimpse that I had. And what's so exciting about the glimpse is we're willing to settle for that. You know, I went through life. I was sober. I helped a lot of people. And I had a glimpse. And that was pretty darn good. It really added some meaning to my life. And so, as the seventh step says, we tend to settle for as much perfection as will get us by. I think somebody who had that really ought to be satisfied with it. Not many people get that glimpse. I really ought to settle for just a glimpse. This is the rest of it. I don't know what we say about the rest of it, but it's an explanation for settling for good. This is good. And Bill has written, I think he was quoting Lincoln, but he has said that the good is the worst enemy of the best that there is. It'll keep us at the good level, and we never will try. The heat never gets high enough to want to change. We stay in a comfort level that is acceptable. Yeah, I like it. Doing good, man. Things are great. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. And that can just stay there. But we never will forget the glimpse. And every so often we'll go back to it and almost like yearning. What is the glimpse? It's returning home. Chuck talks about it all the time. We're going home. We got our Father's hand and we're walking back home. We've been out on a prodigal son adventure. And it didn't work out. It didn't work out. We tried to the best of our ability to create the type of life that we wanted, and we all failed. The beautiful gift that we have as alcoholics, we fail so dramatically that something has to be done about it. We're in the nut ward, in a straitjacket, convulsing, and people won't even come talk to us. Whereas the vast majority of the population fails at an acceptable level. And simply suffers from midlife crisis. What's this all about? I got the yacht. I'm sitting out here thinking of suicide. You see what I'm saying? But it never got really rotten. It's only when it got rotten that we became willing to crack our own ego a little bit in order to survive. And even the ego had to go along with that because it knew that if we actually did commit suicide, it goes too. And so there is a reasonable amount of cooperation on the fatal things that we have. But on the non-fatal ones, which are all the other deadly sins, it settles for as much begrudging progress that it has to concede to keep us from going too far. Too far would be fully awakened. And so I don't know about you, but it is so hard to imagine you in the same spiritual energy as these figures that we're talking about. What do you think is different between you or anyone else in this room and Alan Watts or St. Francis? They had a better beginning. Read the life of St. Francis. Holy cow, he made us look like amateurs. He's on crusades, whacking people's heads off, just going off and off, and then he finally leaves the strictures of the church and goes on a personal search to achieve a different level with a obsession about killing his own ego. So he's just a regular guy, all screwed up, and came to a turning point and then kept going with it. That's the difference. Everybody, all the stories of the great stories that we've read all start out looking like they're failures. You know, every success story, every Hollywood movie, it always starts out with the failure and then the rebound, and that's what makes it magnificent. So, all of enlightened, awakened, whatever you want to call it, people start out average, start out failing, start out just like you and I. The reason is we're all the same. We're all created by the same creator. We all have full spiritual connection with our own creator. It's all there equally. It's not, no one is less equal. We all have exactly the same, as we open up, the same energy is inside of me as inside of anyone else. So what's the problem? Well, just what we've been talking about, the human ego. What did we start with Chuck's lecture? There's only one problem that includes all problems. It's separation from God. It's our conscious awareness tells us that we exist as a separate entity from everybody else in this room, from everybody else on the planet, and from God, and sometimes from ourselves. It's almost like we're divided inside. Probably the hardest peace to achieve anywhere would be peace with yourself. Imagine this. You get in a race with God. You ready? Here's the race. See if you can forgive yourself before he does. Uh-oh, sorry, you lose. Not even close. How long does it take you to forgive yourself when you really screw up? Everybody else said it's fine. So you're 2 hours late. It's fine. Fine. We're so happy you're here. We don't care. Is that what you do? Yeah, it is fine. You're still going at night in bed. God, I can't believe I did that. The hell did I do that for? Boy, you really look stupid with all those people. I don't know about you, but I just go on and on. Then if I'm bored, I'll remember something from a year ago. Remember when you got lost a year ago? Let's go over that again. That really was a screw-up. That was probably the biggest screw-up any guy ever did anywhere. So it's just sitting around. These are like weapons in the torture room. Well, that's this. What do we got tonight? Hey. So, there is an inner conflict inside of everyone in this room, inside of me, and we haven't been able to resolve it. So what do we, I don't care, we pick any problem. I'm picking inner conflict. Can't get at peace with ourselves. Now, we already know there's only one problem. that includes all problems. Okay, got an inner conflict. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to a shrink. I'm going to talk about my childhood. And I'm going to find out what's causing this inner conflict. And then maybe I can put it to rest. And maybe I can figure it out. Maybe I can learn what this inner conflict is. And then maybe I can put it to rest. And the and it never goes to rest. Because that wasn't the problem. The problem was, I think I exist separate from my higher power. That's the problem. And because of that, I can get away with beating myself up as a separate entity. I can't beat myself up as the child of God. I can just enjoy it. There's no one to beat me up. So what does the ego look like? It's fun to speculate. Because it's just a term that we've come up with to attempt to explain the inner conflict that goes on inside of us. And what makes us different is we're aware of the inner conflict that's going on. I mean, we say to ourselves, why am I beating myself up? You follow what I'm saying? So we know that we're beating ourselves up. It's not like we're an animal that's gone crazy. We just keep banging our head into a wall. We're fully aware that we're doing it, and we're trying to figure out why. I wonder why I'm banging my head. This is really hurting me. I ought to stop one of these days, but I'm not sure what it is. And this is going on. So if I were to try and picture my ego, I already have a name for it. The name of my ego is Frank Morgan. Some people know who Frank Morgan was. He was the Wizard of Oz. He was the actor that played the Wizard of Oz. He was the guy, little guy, remember him? And it was he somehow wandered up and ended up in there, and then he got behind the screen and was putting on a show, and then it caught on, and then everybody went, whoa! And that was a hell of a show. He had everybody, they had witches coming. You remember, ooh, and people are running, and the wizard, and you got to go to the wizard. And it took a little girl, a little child, to see through the show. And they finally went, you know, God, this is the end of the world. Now the hordes are coming. Now the hordes are coming. She said, is there somebody behind that screen? And the screen fell over, and there he is. Whoa, whoa. That's just what it's going to look like when we finally confront the ego. Oh, you got me. Sorry. I'm sorry. You didn't really believe all that, did you? I was just I was just kidding. I don't be mad at me. That's pretty hard to believe that there's a Wizard of Oz show going on inside of each of us. What do you think it is? Now that we've been given a glimpse, and we've been given desperation. Now we got the two, remember we started with the two bookends, step one, step 12. That's the magic. That's the magic kingdom. Are those two ingredients? A glimpse and desperation. And the assurance that if we ever went back and tested that desperation again, it's going to get more desperate. So that we are kept together by those two forces. And just those two forces can keep us sober for many, many years. Many, many, many. And then we have each other. And that can keep us sober and pretty happy forever. But not going beyond the glimpse. This is where the individual seeking takes over. To go from pretty darn good to beyond pretty darn darn good. And that's not going to happen generally out of desperation, although we can have events in our sobriety, our wife dying or leaving or just going into a depression or something that could push us to get another glimpse. But mostly it's going to come from listening to an inner yearning that takes us somewhere. And that's one of the main reasons that we like to discourage groups. And we don't have many local people from Tampa. Mainly it is one or two people. A lot of you came alone. You came because something told you to come. And that's why the energy among you is so much fun. I see you at the tables over there, and it's just so animated. It's almost like, why don't we cancel all the lectures and just stay in the chow hall? We'd probably do a lot better. And maybe would. I don't know. I like staying in there. What are you talking about at this table? What are you guys doing over here? Which is entirely different that if I took 10 of my best friends that I hang around with all the time and then we went up in the mountains, we'd still be talking at the level. You know how what I'm saying? There's the hanging around and then there's the, I'm just going there to see what the deal is. And so there came a time when I looked at the Dalai Lama and said, why not? That's all I said. I looked at Alan Watts. I've read his book, The Book. Scott recommended to me many times. And I looked in there and I went, jeez, there's something in me that says this is it. It was just so exciting. It was almost like part of me knew I was coming home. I'd just been given the map to come home. And then I'd put the book down, and then the other part. You don't believe that crap, do you? Don't you think that's a little far-fetched? It's so easy to tear yourself down. What makes you think you deserve anything like that? Isn't there in there? Sure is. This is a revolution. It's almost an armed revolution. We're going to overthrow the current government. And it ain't going without a fight. It's been running you and me forever, ever since we bought into the illusion that we exist separate from our higher power. And that buying in, I'll tell you when I think it happens. This is just me. I sit in my bed at night and I go, wonder when that happened. And I think it's when, whatever age, people are showing us things like a teddy bear and a rattle and a little train. Ooh, 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 ooh. And then, oh, here's something else. And then one day they go to take the bear away and give us the train. And we go, mine. Mine. Now there's something there in addition to the child of God. There's a mine. And then that takes over. You see the difference? Up till then, whatever this spirit, see, we're a spiritual being having a human experience. So we open our eyes as a spiritual being. We go, whoa, 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 look at this. And it's wonderful. And then that day that we go, mine, we've decided that is mine, and it's wrong for them to take it away from me. And we just improve on that story. Now there's me and them, and they're trying to get my teddy bear. They're trying to get my yacht. They're trying to get my country. They're trying to get... Who are they? And who are they getting it away from? Remember the leaf on the tree? There, the other leaves are trying to screw it up for me. He's part of those other leaves. You aren't have a separate address from the tree. I'm post office box 3 on the tree. I got that leaf's mail. I mean, what is that? You see what I'm saying? And so we have established this so strongly that it's hard to believe that we could have fooled ourselves this long. And so when people come along and say, the real world is like these holograms, and when you see it, then you'll realize it's been there all along. And that's what we're trying to communicate, and what the whole program is trying to afford us the entree to is a whole way of going into that world and dropping this world, the power that this world has over us, and only feel the power of our Creator. Well, then how am I supposed to get along in this world? What did Chuck say? I spent 29 years expecting guidance. That's how you get along. You know, now they got this, what is it, GPS or whatever it is. They got satellites up there, and everybody knows exactly where they are at all times. What if we had told the guys in the wagons going west that someday there'd be something orbiting up there that would tell them exactly within a foot and a half of where they are? Or Lewis and Clark, forget the Indian guides. Trust the satellite up there. What? Yeah, there's a thing orbiting, and it watches you when it goes by, and if you ask it, it'll tell you where you are. Now, he can't see it, doesn't know anything about that. It'd be pretty hard to believe in it. So we're sitting here today with the proposition, hey, there's this invisible higher power, and if you will totally turn your life over to it, just take its hand. It'll walk you through the rest of your life, and it'll be wonderful. Yeah. Now watch inside. Are you kidding? Are you really going to try that? Warning. Danger. Maniac at the wheel. He's thinking of trying this crap. Danger. There goes my money, there goes my car, there goes my job, there goes everything. Warning, do not trust God. Do not trust God. Do you hear that? So, what we hope when we try to see that everything that comes up, warning, we just go, oh, that's just separation from God. That's just separation. That's that one problem manifesting itself in many different ways that we can start. You see, all we want to do is quiet the resistance, which is what willingness is. Quiet the resistance. Have an open mind. Open mind. This sign right behind me is how to have an open mind. That was the there's a teacher, an enlightened, whatever you want to call it, awakened type of person. And he was in formal meditation and training for 15 years, et cetera, et cetera. And then he decided, I'm just going to directly awaken. called it the direct path. That's it. That's the entire program right there. You just always allow everything to be. Now, of course, in order to allow everything to be as it is, most of you has to stop commenting and talking and having opinions about everything. And quieting that is not easy. But there it is. None of it can happen without what I just read. Visualizing our own spiritual objective. Because any of you start a business? Any of you start a new hobby? Any of you envision Mike built something to carry his plane out with pontoons on it? He has it in his garage. That's almost like you started with something and then manufactured it, and now he has this machine that picks up his plane with pontoons on it and puts it in his lake. And he envisioned that. He says, you know, I need something. I got the garage. I need that. So he envisioned it, and the envisioning caused it to happen. The strange part about spirituality is once we envision awakening, the most powerful way to get there is something that is way beyond positive thinking. Positive thinking can get some amazing results, but there's something that is probably 1,000 times more powerful. It's called not thinking. No thinking. Now, why would we want to do no thinking? Because there's nothing to know. There's nothing to learn. There's nothing to be figured out. It is only there to enjoy. It's already there. So in order to get there, we have to stop thinking and just be. I saw some of us sitting by the pond. Maybe you were sitting at the different stations of the cross. And you found yourself just taking it in. Taking it in is done without thinking. You're just like you take a breath in. You just take it in. And then you can let it go. And then you take it in. And then you let it go. You don't comment on it. You don't editorialize about it. You just... And so there's a state that many people write about, which is called not knowing. The wonderful place of not knowing. And the final thing that I'd like to tack on the end of this, and they all fit together. Science, both science and religion, have tremendous knowledge about the past and the future. Scientists are getting closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to agreeing about the origin of the universe. And they're getting closer and closer and closer to imagining what the end, if there is an end, or is it going to come back together, or is it going to expand forever? They're really getting where they're starting to agree. And as Bill wrote in the big book, scientists are forcing nature to disclose her secrets. And I've been watching them force the secrets out of nature since I was a little kid. And once they squeeze another one out, they go, we got it. We're this close to everything. And then they find a black hole. And they go, what the hell is that? So they run and they run and they run. Don't worry, don't worry. We're this close. We just got to get around the black hole and we got to get there. And then they go, okay, we're starting to get it. We're starting to get it. What is that? What's that? What's a quark? Why is a quark a neutrino? What are they doing down there? They're behaving differently when we're watching them. What does that mean? But we're this close. Don't worry. Give us another week. We're going to have this. 1,000 years from now, we're this close. So, but anyway, the same thing with religion. That will give us the history. They tell us how it originated. And all of this is wonderful, and we need it. And the future. And there's heaven, and you might go there, and this is what's going to happen, and et cetera. The only thing they leave out where there's very little study is the now, the present moment. And the only thing that can study that, not study it, but takes us there, is spirituality. The spiritual moment is where everything takes place. And the smaller it is, the more powerful it is. I couldn't understand when they were talking about the development, because I was a little kid, of the atomic bomb. And I said, what are they going to build it out of? I remember that was the thing. What are they going to build it out of that'll make it so big, big, big? Well, I guess it was afterwards. And they said, what did they build it out of? They're going to split an atom. I said, well, how big is an atom? Oh, man, you can't even see the damn thing. That's how small it is. I said, so inside of the smallest thing there is all this power? Yes, it's in there. It's you have to split it in order to get it. So what do you think is in the now? I think it's just like a wormhole in space that they talk about. You go from that part of the universe to that part of the universe. You can get there in that moment. How do you get to now? You have to let go of everything that isn't now. Let go of everything that isn't now. And if it really was, in other words, this is everything, and you just go like this, it would happen. We have to pry our fingers open. Everything that constitutes the ego is what has to be let go of. And it just ain't letting go without a fight, which is why the seventh step talks about pain. The pain of letting go. The pain of giving up the kingdom. Okay, I'll give you Rhode Island. But I'm keeping Oklahoma and Texas. And I got to give up Oklahoma? You follow what I'm saying? It just, and the more territory that we concede, the bigger the glimpse gets. So I hope this weekend, in some small way, causes us to redefine our spiritual objective. Your spiritual objective, because it's just yours. Matters not what the gentleman behind you does. You'll be happy for him, but it'll have no effect on you. So you're the seeker. That's what does it say? That word is used a lot in our program. When we read chapter 5, what's the last word? Sought. Could and would. There's God. You want to go? You want to see the whole kingdom? Okay. So it's up to me. If he were sought. Sought through prayer and meditation. Seeker. God-seeking missile. That's our focus. Maybe it gets sharpened here. And you open your eyes. I forget where Bill wrote that. We open our eyes to an unlimited view or whatever it is. And I think that's it. Lift our eyes towards something we never dreamed we would set for ourselves. We're at the end of the time. Let's hang around and visit a little bit. And then we got a break until after lunch. Thank you all for your attention.